Now coming into studio, we have the Bain family, Paul and Zabeth. And Terry playing good host, taking coats and all the rest of it. Is that in your job description, Terry?
I actually don't have one.
Oh, so anything goes, huh?
No, I don't have a job.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Paul and Zabeth, for being here. I know it would be under wonderful circumstances if the circumstances were different, but the reason why you're here is to tell your story. And it's a story that's gone on for a number of years now. It's a story that is shared by so many because so many people find themselves involved with the Ministry of Children and Families, their children removed from them. I've often said that, I'm sure our audience knows for many years, and I still continue, I help families that are been wrongly involved with by the Ministry of Children and Families. And one of the things that always surprised me was how parents can let their kids just be hauled out of their homes on a Friday evening, usually between 9 and 10 o'clock at night, and think that common sense is going to prevail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Common sense doesn't prevail in these cases. And years ago, I was involved in a very high-profile war with then social credit government. My goodness, that goes back.
A long time ago.
Norm Jacobson was minister of, it wasn't Ministry of Children and Families, but it's equivalent back then. And he basically challenged me to a public inquiry, which I embraced. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this hour, I'm going to be challenging that very thing to Mary Polak, who is the Minister of Children and Families. I have about 5 cases, Madam Minister, that I think if you were to truly investigate, you would find and identify consistent problems within your ministry that are causing harm to children. Your ministry, Madam Minister. This case is certainly one of them. Let's start back on how many years ago when all this began for you two.
This started on October the 22nd, 2007, when they officially removed our 3 children from us.
Now, you 3 children at that time, but you now have 4 children. You just had a baby just a few weeks ago now, isn't it?
Yes, it was February the 10th.
Yeah.
And that child had been removed as well.
Yes. He was removed the same day.
And all of these removals stem from one particular case, one particular incident, particular report of an injury. Mm-hmm. This was way back. So, and that's the crucial thing that's been the point of debate from the very beginning. And everything, all the bad things that have happened to you and your family since then all flow from that one thing. What was it that got the attention of the ministry officials, police, health officials in the first place? What exactly happened?
It was an in-home accident that happened. There was an injury on our baby. After feeding of our baby, I had placed her on a blanket on the floor, and our second son came around the corner and he fell on top of her, and it caused an injury, and this is where this all stems from. She was misdiagnosed.
Well, and that, going back to the history of your case, I mean, you as diligent parents took her to the hospital, had her checked. The doctor said, no, she'll be fine. But you knew that there was something still wrong with her.
Right.
So
yes.
You persisted until you could find what was wrong with her. So the medical people didn't even, at first, give it any second thought.
Mm-hmm. No, they didn't.
3 weeks.
No. Yeah, it was approximately 3 weeks that we spent going from emergencies to doctor's clinics, calling the public health line, asking for advice. And during those 3 weeks, the medical professionals noted but allowed our daughter's head to swell 6 centimeters. And she was constantly vomiting. She got dehydrated. And I think that those 3 weeks caused more extensive damage to her than what would have happened if she had been treated.
So, Paul, at what stage did non-health authorities step in? And what were they, like the police and or social workers, when did they step in and start thinking that something else was going on here rather than an accident in the home?
I'm going to ask you to talk really close into your mic.
Sure. Yeah. I imagine it was about the 18th when we went into Children's Hospital, wasn't it? The doctor, we don't know exactly what day it was, but we know that they officially removed the children on the 22nd.
So, had you been told before the removal that they were having suspicions that this was not just an accident, or did that come as a surprise?
We had a meeting with the social worker of the hospital, And she told us she needed to notify the ministry because of this, because the doctor suspected it was shaken baby syndrome.
Well, hang on a second. Shaken baby syndrome.
Right.
And did they point a finger at either of you at that stage?
No.
Usually it's one person that's isolated for the cause of shaken baby syndrome. Yeah. But in our case, we were home together during the time frame, and they didn't point it at either one of us in particular.
Now, you had at that time two older children, and this was the baby of the three.
Yes.
Had there been any other incidents involving the two other children that had come to the attention of social workers or police before then?
Yes, our second son was born at 25 weeks, and due to his premature birth, the doctors noted that he got osteopenia prematurity. Due to injury at that time, the ministry was called to review that, and in 2 weeks they closed the file because it was noted he had osteopenia.
So that was, I don't know what osteopenia is.
It's brittle bones, basically.
Oh, I see. So yeah. had been some broken bones for that child? And that was attributed to the premature birth.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
So, okay. So you were already kind of on the radar then.
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. So that was with one child. And besides that, any other instances at all?
No.
Nothing at all?
No.
And was there ever any time with the child that was on the infant that was on the floor that got bumped into where there had been any sort of a case of any sort of... corporal punishment of this baby for crying, right?
No, this is normal sort of thing.
No.
Nothing.
She didn't cry. She whimpered.
Yeah.
She was a very quiet baby.
Yeah.
Very, very soft.
What's the baby's name, by the way?
Bethany.
Bethany.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious, when you went to Children's Hospital, was Dr. Halati involved in any of this?
Later on, yes.
Later on, we called her and asked her for a second medical opinion because we knew Dr. Colburn's opinion was a misdiagnosis.
Right.
And her answer to us was that she couldn't step on any colleague's toes. Yeah. So we were denied a second opinion.
She couldn't interfere.
From her.
Okay. Yeah.
So your three children were taken into custody and placed into foster homes. Were they divided up into three different foster homes? Were they kept together?
The two boys are in one foster home. Bethany was in another foster home.
And at that stage, you're probably thinking, this is just a horrible misunderstanding. It's bound to be cleared up in a few weeks or months. But that's not what happened.
No.
That was wishful thinking.
Yeah.
No, that's not what happened.
What happened? Just walk us through then what happened.
Well, basically, after the removal... we had a family meeting on October the 31st, and we knew at that point, we were told the ministry was not seeking second medical opinions, even though we asked for one. And if we wanted that, we'd have to seek that out on our own. So that started us on the journey of trying to find experts that knew child abuse issues that could review her files and her films and provide a second medical opinion.
So the ministry really didn't want to investigate. They had what they thought was their diagnosis of the shaking baby syndrome, and they were just going to ride that.
The funny thing is in court we found out that a report dated October the 22nd was falsified by the ministry. They knew that Baden's situation was osteopenia, but when they wrote up the letter, they called it unexplained fractures. And our lawyer got him to admit, yes, that was falsified.
So they're falsifying documents to support
to
their position.
Their
4 days later.
To build their case. That's correct.
Listen, we'll catch our breath here for a minute because this is just horrific stuff to try to come to grips with.
It is.
We have our emails coming to us. And by the way, if you'd like to share some thoughts about anything on our show, send us an email to roadkillradio@live.ca. Here's an email from one listener viewer. I've been following this case for about a year or longer, and it's absolutely sickening what the government, the Ministry of Children and Family Development, and some individuals have done to this wonderful family. They are good parents who obviously love their children and would and have done everything and anything for them. Because of the corrupt Child Protection Agency, they have lost their home, Zabeth's grand piano, their careers, and most of all their children. The judge made a corrupt decision, which he must have known was so wrong, when he ordered the children to stay in government custody. Every day they are away from their parents is a day of suffering for the children and the parents. We cannot sit by any longer. We must protest en masse and let the politicians and the judiciary know that we are not going to have our families destroyed by corrupt thugs who would, if there were any real justice, be up on kidnapping charges. That's from a Lee Johnson, who you might know. I don't know.
I would suggest kidnapping charges and child abuse charges, because I can't think of anything more damaging to a child than to be ripped from their parents. This brand new baby, and I'm going to just jump ahead. We are going to come back, because I think it's important for our audience to know that there was some discussions about what to do. You didn't hide this next pregnancy.
No.
Matter of fact, an individual that's going to factor very heavily in what I have to say to the minister is an individual by the name of Bruce McNeil. And he wrote to you, and prior to this baby being born, basically saying, let's get a plan so we don't have to take this baby. Is that generally what his letter says, right?
That's what the letter says.
And so all is good intention. Now, I should tell our audience that Bruce McNeil has been in a number of cases in the past that I've been involved with. And I contacted one of the families that I think will be included in my challenge to the minister, a family named the Burnett family, that was at the other end of this. They were the good foster family for some very troubled children. And what the ministry did to those children when they ripped them out of this well-intentioned, great foster home because a social worker didn't like this Christian family is tragedy. It is a crime what has happened. And, and we have the time to tell now what's going on with these kids. So Bruce McNeil is part of the problem, Madam Minister. So he writes to the, and it sounds all nice, but this is where so much lip service is paid. And it would be really good if they would act on it. Did any kind of plan get put in place for you guys?
No.
No, we had, they sent some social workers over to our house one morning. I believe it's included in that correspondence, but we had asked
they,
for...
They pounded on your door for half an hour, even though you're working at nights now so you can see your children.
On all the doors.
On all the doors.
Including the balcony door, for half an hour. And the meeting, we'd had no notification that they were coming that early in the morning to meet us.
Well, Zabeth had morning sickness. She was really, really sick in the morning. We spent half an hour.
So you're still pregnant at this time.
Exactly.
And these social workers, without notice to discuss this meeting, are pounding on your door at an before 9 o'clock in the
exactly.
morning, if I remember right,
right.
From the information. Pounding on your door. Isn't there a better way of doing this?
They could have phoned. Yeah.
So what happens then when the baby comes? Because they take the baby immediately?
Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a private room yet. I was still in the examination room, and they came in and told us that they were removing the baby. They had orders from their superiors to remove the baby. And
would that be Bruce McNeil?
That is the individual in charge of our case, yes.
This was just how long ago again? This was
February the 10th.
Okay, that's
just 5 hours after she gave birth. It takes an hour and a half just to drive from Hope to Surrey.
Can there be anything more traumatic? My heart goes out for you.
No.
I mean, if they're going to do this, give you a week and keep you under watch or
do this, they said they didn't want to do it, Terry. First they tell them that they don't want to do it, and then bango.
How could they not know that there's just about nothing that you can do that's worse for a mother and a child than to take the child away, even if that mother is a mass murderer? Keep her under watch.
I think they get to keep their kids in jail.
Keep them under watch, close watch for a day or two, and let the baby and the mother have that time.
Exactly.
My goodness, this is amazing. There must have been something that happened from the time of the first apprehension to this time here last month. Certainly, you guys must have really messed up somewhere along the line. You must have done something to have them take this horrible act.
They are basing it all on the one incident.
That one incident.
With Bethany.
Yeah. Still.
And they also...
Had they thought that all that time, you hadn't... even if they thought you had done that at that time.
Yeah, worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario. Yeah. Okay, you did it. And worst case scenario, you admit... you did it. One of you did it. I mean, isn't there some sort of, okay, you know what? We've been watching these guys for 3 years. they're pretty good people. I mean, they haven't been throwing stones at windows, and they haven't been robbing banks, and they haven't been going and molesting kids. And you know, they're good people. They obviously love their kids. They want to get their kids back. They're not part of some coven or something. And maybe they've learned their lesson. And okay, well, let's see how they do with this child. There was none of that either.
No, and even worse than that, they, instead of allowing our baby to remain in the hospital, because
the baby was premature as well. Yeah,
yes, he was premature, and
he was more small than premature, though. He was basically, he was 36 weeks, but he was only 3 pounds
and 15 ounces. And the ministry decided to take him out of the hospital into foster care when he was barely 4 pounds, and the judge's decision on our three other children was still going to be arriving that very next week.
They put him in the car seat to take him out of the hospital, and he didn't fit the car seat. They had to stuff towels underneath the straps in order to make up the room.
Oh, okay. But what about what we know from...
Just a second here, because Zabeth just mentioned something. Even though the judge's decision on the earlier apprehensions was going to come down just a week following this birth, a decision we know which ended up not being favorable, but... Even though that was going to be just a week, and there was a chance, at least 50-50 one would think, that the judge would say, hey, clean slate, go. You know, and then you would have got your children back, you'd keep that child. Worst possible scenario for maybe would be that the judge says no. So, but any sort of scenario says that let's let them keep the baby for a week, and we'll in the hospital. Let's keep them in hospital where they can't do any harm to the baby until this ruling comes up. And they didn't even do that.
It's better for the baby.
Well, more as I was going to say, they have they are duty bound to do what is in the best interest of the child.
That's right.
Isn't it in the best interest of a child to be given mother's colostrum? I mean, we know how essential that is to the health of the new baby, especially a premature baby. Mother's milk.
Yeah.
Nurturing, all those things. Every act they did was contrary to the best interest of that child. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to promise you one thing. Regardless of what the minister does, I am going to swear an affidavit and put it on your child's files in case, worst case scenario here, so that those kids can sue the bloody ass off the ministry when they get to be a legal age to do it. We have other cases. We're going to be doing this now with the Burnett children, the next case I'm going to talk about that Bruce McNeil was involved with. There has to be lawsuits. Now, whether or not we can get judges to apply the law, because we have another problem in this province, in this country, that judges are unaccountable. And when I read the decision in this case, and like so many of the other thousands of cases I've been involved with, you know, judges hide behind the ministry here. They're so fearful of making a wrong decision and having it come back to bite them that their reputation takes precedence over the interest of your children once again. We have a big problem on a whole bunch of fronts here. We're not going to get into the industry aspect of this, but I also want to know, because they're, you know, regardless of the child not fitting properly into the car seat and towels, I somehow don't think that's in the manufacturer's operation of a car seat.
No.
But is it true what I heard, that the baby was involved in a car accident?
Yes, we just found that out now. I have yet to see the report. It was faxed to me. But yeah, I was told on the way back home from a visitation that he was involved in a car accident.
That was on Monday, we were told.
And we were told that he was taken to a clinic to be assessed to see how he was. And from the examination, we were told he was okay. But we're concerned.
Hey, you've been there before, though,
exactly,
haven't you?
3 weeks being told that they were okay.
Well, lucky the accident wasn't in your car, and then, boy, they'd be charging with something else again.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the great hope was that this is going to get before a judge, and the judge will weigh all the facts, and the judge will make the decision. And, and this did take place. A guy named Judge Crabtree, and this made there was some news on it just in the province on March 4th, just a couple of days ago. Couple heartbroken, judge rejects children's return after 3 years. Surrey couple fighting for custody of their 4 young children are heartbroken by a court ruling saying the kids must remain in foster care for another 6 months. According to the story, Judge Crabtree rejected Zabeth's explanation for Bethany's injuries. Judge pointed to inconsistencies, saying he was unable to place any weight on it. I don't know exactly what that meant, but
what were inconsistencies in your testimony?
Well, from what I remember from reading the judgment there, I believe there was, he referenced inconsistencies when I referred to our son running, and in another testimony, I called it a stumbly run, I believe was the wording.
So you didn't use the right adjective two times in a row, is that
it? Well, it was 3 years. I testified 3 years previous at a presentation hearing, and then at the trial, you know, 3 years later. But the other item was watching.
Got to get your story straight,
too. Yeah, okay.
Was where my husband was. If I was out of the room, like I said I was, I wouldn't have known where he was. Well, to clarify that, my husband told me where he was then. So I had included that in my testimony without mentioning that. That's what Paul had told me. So there was inconsistencies in there along those regards.
Very minor. Could be explained in a second.
Well, one of the things that the ministry's lawyer tried to catch her on was, well, was Baden 12 inches or 13 inches away before he fell? And things like this. And, you know, he tried everything under the sun to try and trip her up. You know, like how far away was a hospital?
12 inches or 13 inches.
Yeah. How far away was a hospital from our home? Was it 5 miles, 2 miles, 1 mile?
She's
supposed to know that.
Yeah.
No, I'm in the back seat trying to give my little one CPR. I wasn't paying as much attention to the road.
And after 3 years, your memory is so muddled and blurred.
So that was the kind of evidence that this Judge Crabtree put weight on?
Mm-hmm. But he refused to put any weight on our 10 expert witnesses.
But he also refused the ministry's shaken baby syndrome verdict. He left it as unexplained injuries instead.
Yeah. Okay, now.
So then just to be safe, another 6 months.
Well, yeah, during those 6 months, the judge omitted in his ruling the social worker's testimony, the caregiver's testimony, the director's testimony. He didn't reference that at all in his ruling.
What about the fraudulent? Nothing.
No
lack of credibility there. You use two different adjectives, but a social worker who commits fraud
and lies and is deceitful and manipulative. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's just a minor detail. Is that how it works?
The judge knew that we didn't have a working relationship at the time with the ministry and vice versa, and I believe he mentioned that in the ruling. But now, during the next bit, Paul and I will be trying to work with and meet the satisfaction of the courts and to prove that we are good parents. And we're going to do what we can to prove that.
How has this affected the reports here about it? Great financial costs that it's taken, the toll that it's taken.
That's right here.
Obviously, what exactly has happened in your lives over the last 3 years, financially and personally, as you fought the fight here?
Well, we lost our home, and it, through the lawyer's costs and at the time a lot of medical costs to hire medical experts. We lost our home through that. We had to auction off my grand piano. I'm a piano teacher, and we auctioned that off.
I lost two jobs.
Lost them because
The ministry scheduled meetings and visits in the daytime, in the middle of the day. So I couldn't take any more time off than I was, and eventually I was suspended from one. And then the other one, someone phoned in and said, oh, you know, they're dangerous around children. So I ended up being dismissed from that one as well. So
your reputation now, you've been
apparently our picture, we were told by other people that our picture was posted in a daycare in Hope. If these people come around the daycare, phone the police. We never actually seen it, but this is what we were told.
All on the one case.
Yeah. Yes.
For which there was very marginal, it's conjecture, and you've got medical experts.
It's all hearsay. Yeah.
I'm just wondering how, was there some prejudice that was formed against you for some reason at the outset?
We don't know.
I don't know.
It certainly seems that way, but we don't know.
I know that shaken baby syndrome is a major diagnosis. And what we're trying to do right now is we started a medical conference called Evidence-Based Medicine and Social Investigation, and we're bringing in August 4th, 5th, and 6th a variety of medical experts and lawyers that are going to address these issues. But I think that was a prejudice that specific diagnosis of abuse?
I'm just trying to, just following up on that, though. When, once the it became unexplained or your experts disproved that, why wasn't all of this, I mean, you know, is this what the ministry can do, just go leapfrog from theory to theory to theory?
It seems that way.
There was another case that was similar to ours here in B.C., and that one went through an appeal, and we actually used that case in one of our closing arguments. And once the judge knew that the ministry had that information of a different diagnosis from other medical experts, that decision showed that they should have dropped it and returned the children. That would have been the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But in our case, they didn't do that.
Now, I want to talk a little bit from a taxpayer point of view and also, again, from the best interest of the children, because you have tried to work with the ministry early on in this. That you brought the children together at one point to reside with your parents, did you not?
The ministry placed our two boys with my parents, and then they allowed us to move in with them, and they stayed there in that environment, and it was working fine until we went to media, and then they removed them on June 12th.
Oh, right. So, so you're being punished then. And you know, I happened to get an article, and I think that it's very, very important. And I want, you know, Minister Mary Polak to take note, and I want Judge Crabtree to take note, too. But this was just published in the National Post, The Deck is Stacked. And it's talking about the courts and publicity, those kinds of things. And it refers to an English philosopher, Jeremy Bentham, once famously noted, where there is no publicity, there is no justice. Hmm. Publicity is the very soul of justice. Hmm. So we here at Roadkill are going to make available to you a lot of publicity, because I think this story should get out, and every parent should be aware of what goes on here.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
parent, you know, we all walk around with this fear when our children are young, you know, how we behave in public because we don't want somebody to report us. You know, is that indicative of where we have fallen in a society where parents can't be a parent anymore because somebody's going to pass judgment, and then you're going to have this agency, this Gestapo-like agency, come in and make these kinds of decisions? It seems to be a legitimate concern. And I think all good parents and all good people should stand up and say no more to this. We need to change the law so there's accountability to the ministry, because as long as they profess to be operating in the best interest of children, whatever that means, they're immune from liability.
You know, and If Canadians or Americans or anybody out there who's watching right now or listening thinks, well, you know, we trust our civil servants. We trust these guys. They're experts. And, you know, they're the guys who are professionals, and they're supposed to know what they're doing. All I want you to do is to Google the name Charles Smith. He was the Canadian pathologist, the coroner in the province of Ontario, who found evidence of criminal misconduct in so many dozens and dozens of child abuse cases, and quite often these alleged child abuse cases, with child injury cases, where children had died of injuries of some sort, and he found all sorts of supposed evidence indicating that these children had been subjected to abuse and had. And he reckoned on his testimony, his supposed expert testimony, many people were convicted and put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
In the last year or two, it's come out that he didn't know what he was talking about, that he had no expertise, that indeed many people were wrongly imprisoned. Charles Smith, Canadian pathologist Charles Smith. All of those, the sort of thing that we're hearing now, thankfully, is not as drastic as that. It's pretty darn drastic when you have your children snatched away the way you guys have had your children snatched away. But thank goodness that it wasn't as horrible of a nightmare as that could happen when people who don't know what they're doing pretend to have expertise they don't have, and then get involved in a system where it's cover your butt, and go along with what people seem to want to hear. As you said, shaken baby syndrome was the malaise of the day. And Carrie, when you and I first started reporting on this, it was Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Remember that?
Yeah, and I think there was about 200 cases there that that got turned over in England as well. I forget who expert was in that, but they had to reinvestigate a whole bunch of cases. Terry, we've got a call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am, Terry. It's Mel Maddox.
Yes, go ahead.
Terry, how are you guys tonight? Just sitting here listening to Baines just brings back lots of memories for me.
It sounds like a Mel Mabbitt.
It is. It is.
Well, we just got your email.
I certainly feel for you folks. It's I've been 12 years fighting the ministry. I guess 15 years fighting the ministry. Carrie's very familiar with the case there, but they are a frustrating bunch. I'm sure you guys are finding that out. And it's not just the ministry. It's the courts that piggyback on the... with the ministry and vice versa. So,
well, and Mel Mabbitt's case is kind of interesting because his kids are at an age now where they're suing the ministry.
Huh.
Yeah, and so actually your case is one of the cases that we have going to be involved in my challenge to the minister, Mel.
Well, you know, if I were Paul and Zabeth right now listening to Mel and hearing the words 15 years, my stomach would be... falling right now, and I'd be having an even sicker feeling in my stomach than I'm sure they have been having in their stomachs for the last several years themselves. But to think that now I don't know Mel Mabbitt the specifics of your case at all, but you know, if you are innocent and if this has been going on for all that time.
Well, no, the cases was
goodness.
Very different. That was a marital dispute that the ministry got involved with there. So the children
maybe
were in. There
this.
Was a little bit of foster care because the mother was a chronic alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And rather than place the children with the father, they kept them with the mother. You know, I mean, here you've got this chronic alcoholic, but because she'll accept services, that's safe for the children. You know what? You know why? Because you know what her safety plan was, Terry O'Neill, that she'd hire a babysitter when she wanted to drink. So she'd go and drink in a bedroom, hire a 16-year-old babysitter to take care of the children. Yeah. And that was a good safety plan for the minister to leave the children in the care of that individual.
I just thought of the worst word you could hear at the door is, we're from the ministry and we're here to help.
Help, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you say, oh, come on in, sure, I need help, you'll be okay.
Yeah. So,
okay, can I just go back? I need to...
Is Mel still there?
Yeah, thanks, Mel.
Yep. Okay, thanks, folks.
Okay,
good luck with your case, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I want to go back to the children residing with your family home, and because that sounds like a good plan to me. That's okay. Here, the ministry's doing something sensible, but then they get their knickers in a knot because the media comes in, and you use the tools, the only tools available to you, and they... spank you and say, well, the children are out of here because there's been a change in safety plan. Now, I understand that I, as a taxpayer, am now on the hook for an excess of $6,000 a month to pay a foster parent.
At least. It was $5,600 in court before Josiah.
Well, special needs children, the caregivers would get more money than that. And it probably worked out about $7,000 a month now with Josiah. And you're looking at about $84,000 a year.
Tax-free.
But, by the way, how is the health of Bethany, who is the baby who is originally... is she okay now?
She's doing better. There is speech delay, and she needs therapy for that. And that's the biggest issue that I can see.
How often do you get to see your children?
Well, we get them... Well, we now have an order in place, which I'm grateful for, that we can rely on. We see them for 7 hours at home. On Saturdays, and then we see them on Wednesdays for 2 hours in the community. Two times a week
Nine
is just nothing for a family.
And how are they? Must be so confused.
They are.
Tell me what's well, it they like get, what, from their point of view.
They
what
get told they from the ministry workers and from the foster parents that they're never coming home.
Really?
They're told bad things about us as well. One time in a visit, Baden asked me, do you like my friends? He asked me three times, and I said, yes, I do. I love your friends. And he said, the caregiver, I'm not going to say her name, but she said that you're dangerous around my friends.
And when
and
Christmas
we can't day? We can't confront anything. We can't say to the driver, what's this garbage my son's being told? She goes, I don't know. There's no one to talk to.
Yeah, wasn't it about two Christmases ago now? Yeah. They came out a visit and told us that they were told that this was the last Christmas that you'd see your parents. And this was before the trial had completed. And that wasn't the case. We saw them the Christmas after. And
I think
still...
something that's even worse was our lawyer brought out from the team leader in court that he had promised the caregivers that they could keep the children when they won this case. And this is even before they went to trial.
There is a presumption of winning the case.
Yeah. All on one incident that was marginal at worst, and from your point, I mean...
It's actually more and more to do with money, it looks like.
Whose money?
Our money. Taxpayers' money.
They want the money?
They've paid... There's probably... We figure over $1 million that has been spent on our case alone.
Well, it is an industry, and this industry requires children in its care. That's one of the things that we have said. And I should tell our audience, too, because I don't think I've spoken very much about this, but when we were challenged by Norm Jacobson, the minister back in the day of social credit, Stephen Owen was Ombudsman of the day. And I know that Stephen had concerns about the practices within the ministry at that point in time. And I'm happy to report that the cases that were investigated and got expanded resulted in finding very much on my side. And the minister of that day was quite an honorable individual and actually moved to correct things within the Ministry of Children and Families as we now know it. Back then, it was a different ministry. But there was actually some leadership shown, and willingness to identify and act on the problem. Mm-hmm. And back then, part of the problem was the industry. This industry requires children. It's the most insidious formula for job creation that I have ever seen. Mm-hmm. It requires children. This is, look at all the people that are employed. We've got judges working here. We've got lawyers. We've got, so how many social workers have been involved? We've got different department heads.
Yeah.
We've got court transcribers. We've got all of these people who are dependent on your children being in the system.
Yeah. And certainly there are cases when children are being horribly abused and deserve
protection.
To be protection.
Exactly.
Listen, this is generating a lot of emails. Mm-hmm. Cecilia has just emailed us, and there's actually two emails after hers as well, asking, how old was the child who stumbled over Bethany? Was he or she old enough to give his or her story?
No.
How old was that child?
The child was just over 2 years old.
So couldn't really give.
No.
Okay.
But she asked an interesting question. How does he feel about that now?
We personally have never told him. We don't know what they've told him.
We would not want to expose that to him and cause him feelings of guilt.
Yeah. We've got just a minute here. More letters. From Michelle, what do Paul and Zebeth think would be a solution within the ministry?
Right now, the short-term solution we're looking at, because of the court's ruling, is that Paul and I are prepared to work with them, if they'll work with us right now, to see them home, so that we have a definite game plan that they will be coming home within the time frame of 6 months indicated. We have written a letter to the ministry asking them what would satisfy them, what concerns are there other than the injury that happened, and what can we do to meet those concerns to show that we are willing and able to be good parents. So that's our first step, and we're prepared to do what it takes with that.
Mm-hmm. And have you heard from the ministry yet?
No, we have not.
See, the problem is in the beginning we had a meeting with the ministry, and they kept saying that we're not working with them, we're being uncooperative. And I asked them point blank, I said, what does it mean to work with you? What do you want us to do? And they said, to admit and take responsibility for what you did.
Oh, yeah. And we've heard that scenario,
exactly.
And it's usually in a dark dungeon somewhere.
Exactly. So how do you suppose to work with
them? Well, there was one farther thing that was said from their legal counsel during mediation, and that is, in order to move the case forward, we need a statement that's consistent with our diagnosing doctor. So that would be consistent with
shaken baby syndrome.
Exactly. But the courts have said it's not shaken baby.
So now where does that
start? We got another call.
Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Yes. Welcome to Roadkill.
Thank you. I'm just curious. In the past, I know that Paul and Zabeth had gone to the media, and then their two boys were taken from them then. Are there going to be repercussions from doing the show here? Is the ministry going to disallow you to see your children because of this?
Only time will tell.
You know, and I'd like to say this. I think it's a different kettle of fish when you're sitting on the set of Roadkill Radio with Kerry Simpson and Terry O'Neill by your side. We will not let this one down. I know the downstream media, and you've had some good coverage, but there isn't consistent coverage. There isn't updates weekly if we need to do it on this case. But any social workers that are watching, and I'm sure you are, Madam Minister, when you get a copy of this, we will not let this story go. Know that now.
Yeah. And,
well, it's wonderful to hear, because I think it needs to get out, and I'm proud of Paul and Zabeth for being on the show there tonight, and wish you guys all the best.
Thank you. Thank
you. You know, so much of what goes on in the ministry is they put fear into people, and they want you to comply and be quiet and all the rest of it. The best thing you can do is to expose this as loudly as you possibly can. I think you have a long enough track record of trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And where has that got you? Nowhere.
That's right.
You know, that's the problem that we have in these cases.
So now it's time to do the loud thing.
Now it's do the loud thing. Yeah.
Well, we have to stand up for other parents.
Absolutely.
And other children. Yeah, because this will just continue to be perpetrated for years to come. Mm-hmm.
Do you have another call?
I'm hearing another call. We'll know here in a minute.
Okay, we have another email. Roy says, are the politicians afraid of this union, Social Workers Union? Are they afraid of the top bureaucrats in this ministry? That's obviously a question our guest can't answer, and I will attempt to answer it on behalf of politicians. And I will say that they're probably just ignorant of this. That there's the government is a huge apparatus. How many politicians are there in British Columbia? 95. How many ministers? You know.
I'm gonna come back to that because you're bang on. But we've got another call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hi. I'm supposed to be out of the country, but I'm not. And I tuned into the station and thought I should call, realizing that I have a heart for these people because I've been through the same kind of situation, and I can see some of the same players being in it, being namely the director, Bruce McNeil. And I would just like to encourage the Baines and tell them your biggest weapon is to use media. The Ministry of Children are fearful of the media. They will try to shut down the mainstream media. They will try to give the media concerns by saying such things as, well, you just don't know all the truth. We can't release all the truth to you. They try to operate on fear. And I definitely can see them trying to destroy your family by speaking to your children and telling them things that put fear in them as well as in the foster parents and everybody concerned. I would just like to tell you to hang in there. Use whatever you can. A secret is only, you know, a secret is what gives a basis for fear, but you need to bring it out and speak loudly. Yours is not the only case. I'm coming from a foster parent's position where I've had children taken from my home simply because a social worker thought I was a little bit too strong for her, and I didn't want to do what she wanted to do for the children. I've been in a position on the Foster Parents Association, and I've seen other cases. You see the same people all the time, all the same social workers, the same team leaders, the same director involved in these cases, and they use the same
tactics
all the time.
Well, you know, this leads into your advice not to give up.
Do not give up.
Well taken here. We're getting so many emails and calls on this. We have another email from Michelle. How can people best support you, Paul and Zabeth? How do you stay strong despite all this horrible circumstances? Well, let's deal with the first one.
Yeah. Thank you, caller.
Thank you, caller. Yes. How can people best support you? Do you want people writing to the ministry? Do you have an online petition? Do you have a website people can sign on to or anything? Like, maybe you don't. Maybe I'm giving you ideas right now. Mm-hmm. What can people do to support you?
Yeah, there's a few ways. First of all, yes, letters can help. And there's a blog that's written by the pastor that married us, Ron Unruh. It's called GPS. And they can sign on as a follower and get his updates and comment there. But he also has ways to support us listed on that blog.
So what's the exact address for the blog?
It's called GPS.
And that's
just type in Ron Unruh GPS and it comes up in Google.
Or just go to our homepage and click right for the full background.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to touch base first because I'm going to come back to this because this is important. But with what you said, Terry, about the ministers, this and that. Now, before I ask the question, which I will, about what does Minister Polak know about your case, I want to go back to the days when we did do the challenge with Norm Jacobson. And I found myself in his office, and you're very much correct, Terry. He sat there because I basically just let him have it for 45 minutes. After all, he did invite me there. So, you know, I don't mince my words, and it was very clear. I don't have a whole bunch of time to waste on this. And I ended up spending 45 minutes. He basically sat there, and with this astonished look on his face, I left after 45 minutes. I came back to the mainland. He called me at home that night and asked me to be back in Victoria the next morning.
Wow.
In that meeting was the equivalent of the director, the minister, the executive assistant, and little old me. 45 minutes into that meeting, the then director took early retirement because it was very clear he had not been giving the minister full information about what was really going on in the ministry.
Wow.
And that's what happens so often in these big bureaucracies. Ministers come and go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these same bureaucrats just kind of fester and stay.
Yeah.
And we pay them too much, right? Well, within the ministry they do. There's some very good working bureaucrats, but within the ministry...
Some of them flourish. Some of them fester. Okay.
Well, in this case, I think the festering. But I want to tell our audience there, you know, the letters help, but please copy the letters to either us here at Roadkill so we can keep track of what kind of correspondence is going, or you guys, you know, if you get them, make sure we get copies. But my question is, what does Minister Polak know about this case? Obviously, people have written to her.
Yeah.
Yes, we know that people have written to her, and we've received a few copies of the letters that have been sent to her. But as far as what...
What's her response?
Any response at all?
It's been the same response. Because it's before the court, she can't get involved. She can't discuss... She can't discuss details of the case because of confidentiality reasons, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know what we'll do? We'll just put a letter off to her and say, you know, we'll waive all our rights to confidentiality.
Exactly.
Let's chat about this.
Do you know Mr. Polak?
Yes, I do.
Polak, and I do too. So.
Yeah. We've got another call, and we're running quick out of time. So, caller, you're going to have to be quick.
I'll be quick. Kerry, this is Yvonne Johnson. You helped me bring home my daughter 8 years ago. I have contacted Paul and Zabeth on Facebook and through emails, telling them what I had to go through as well, and what we decided to go through, and that the Lord had actually sent many supporters for me who ended up being my spokespeople while I had to face the ministry. And some of the suggestions I made to Zabeth was just to take it in your own hands. Like, you have to do whatever it takes. Like, go take a first aid course, go get some budgeting course, get counseling, even though you don't need it, just to put down, say, I've done all this. Mm-hmm. What else can you ask of me? And that's why I, in the end, when we went to court, that there's nothing else that they could put on me. So we ended up beating the CCO, and I just wanted to say to Paul and Zabeth that you are in our hearts. There's a bunch of us ladies that are praying for you, and we're going to continue writing letters and doing everything we can to support you. Love you both.
Thank you,
Yvonne. Thanks very much.
Yvonne, get back in touch with me. All these cases that come up and you hear, oh my goodness, all these years ago, you know, and here we are, the same old, same old.
Same old, same
This
old.
Has got to end.
Yes,
the abuse of children has got to end under the guise of children's best interest.
Right.
It's a facade.
Abuse of parents, too.
Well,
it's abuse of families. And you hear about families being under stress for economic reasons. The government's put families under stress.
Yeah.
Our first hour of the show was government and unions
imposing,
putting families under stress.
Yep.
By imposing unwanted propaganda on them. Here's another example here where you've got governments being a prime factor for ripping families apart.
Yeah.
You know, we can complain about high taxes ripping families apart. We can complain about, you know, bad economic policy ripping families apart. But here, that's almost once or twice removed from what's going on here. This is directly, physically, manifestly ripping a family apart.
By design.
By design. Mm-hmm.
By design.
And all, we're doing it for your own good. We're from the ministry and we're here to help.
Yeah. Maybe our new premier designate, Family Values.
Family First, Family First, Christy Clark.
Yeah.
I know, Carrie, you don't have much hope for any changes under Clark.
You know what? I'm always an optimist, Terry, and I live each day.
I'll call you a cockeyed optimist.
Yeah, I live each day doing all I can.
Yes.
But I think the solutions within the ministry are not that complicated, but it will take leadership. Yeah. Yeah, and we've got one more email. Do we have time?
No, we've got several more coming. They just keep coming in. Sorry, we can't get to them all. Thank you so much to Anita and Heather and Stephen and Deanne for
Jeff and Ron.
I think we got to all those ones as well. Tremendous. Listen, our hearts go out to Palms.
And we will not. Yeah, we will keep this up. We will. Absolutely. We will be doing this again. You and I are.
She's got a track record. I have one too. Editor BC Report. We did a lot of stories on this sort of stuff.
Good tag team, eh? Okay, they're in trouble now.
They are. You've got the terrible twosome.
Or terrific twosome. Yeah. Come on, they're terrific.
We want them to tremble over the terrible twosome.
Okay. You win this one.
Thank you. Anyway, thanks so much.
You guys hang in there and be strong. And we'll get together soon.
You've got two more supporters here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And that's been Roadkill Radio for another week. It's been an amazing show. We've had, I think we set a record for
callers
and emails and everything. Obviously, two issues that struck close to home. Two very important
literally
issues.
Home.
Literally, both of them. Yeah. Very much so. And we're going to stay on both of these issues, stay on top of them, and bring you a lot more interesting stuff next week as well. So we'll see you again next week here on Roadkill Radio.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.